This is Representative Mark Olson. I'll call the local government meeting to order for March 29th. We'll delay the minutes for a bit, and we have two bills on the agenda today. Representative Anderson's bill is first, House File 3451, and then we have Representative Hornstein's bill. We do have a quorum. Just so much as have a quorum. Representative Anderson, are you ready? Okay. Representative Anderson moves that House File 3451 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. To your bill, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for moving the bill for me. House File 3451 comes as is designated a municipal land dedication requirement. We create a more uniform park dedication standard by incorporating principles from the county park dedication fee authority into the municipal park dedication fee standard. And this county park statute provides a more complete and equitable structure for park dedication and park fees. I have with me today Peter Coyle and others to testify on behalf of the bill, their concerns about it, and people from the Builders Association who would also like to testify. So without me delaying this, I'd like to have them talk to the bill, if that would be okay with you,
Mr. Chair. Just fine. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Coyle. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Peter Coyle, Larkin Hoffman Law Firm. We are counsel to the Builders Association, and we are testifying today in support of the bill. About 3 years ago, at the request of the counties, the legislature approved language that defined more specifically the way in which park fees and park dedications occur. And that was something that the Builders Association worked with the counties on. The primary objective of this bill is to take the county's language and put it into the municipal statute so that the two function and look the same. There are some minor differences, but for the most part, the goal here, which your council can confirm to you, is to simply mimic what's in county statutory authority today. Let me be clear about what we are not trying to accomplish here. We are not trying to alter the manner in which cities can collect park fees. We are not trying to alter the manner in which cities can take park dedication if they choose to do that. What we are trying to do is build in some accountability into the system, because frankly, in some cases, while we pay park fees to cities or we may provide park dedications to them, they don't always have a plan in mind for how they're going to deal with the land or the money. And so one of our requests, which is part of the bill, is that they have a park plan, that they have a written park plan that's been prepared by somebody and approved by the council. So when the developer is being asked to dedicate land or provide fees, which we are obligated to do, that there be a way to track it against the CIP, which is how we have characterized it. That's one of our objectives. And then secondly, our goal with this bill is to ensure that the park fees are actually used to improve park facilities and not pay for staff or not pay for the lawnmower guy who goes out and mows all the city's public facilities. Our feeling is that ought to be a taxpayer, that is a property taxpayer obligation, and not something that should be part of the development process. We're happy to pay for new facilities. We're happy to pay for improved park facilities. But we think that if they are existing facilities and we're talking about maintenance or restoration of those facilities, that shouldn't be part of the development process. That's the gist of the bill, Mr. Chairman. I know that there's representatives of the City of Eden Prairie who are here today, and I think they have comments that may raise a couple of questions, but for the most part, those are our comments.
Do you want to take questions now, Mr. Representative Anderson, or do you have others you want to testify first?
It doesn't make any difference if we want to
okay.
Have questions.
Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson and Mr. Coyle. I'm curious about the change on the per lot as opposed to the based on fair market value of the land for the park fees. Some could make the argument that it really doesn't matter how much your house is worth. It's a structure that holds people that use the facilities, and the size or value just because you have a larger house, why should you have to pay more for the development of the park fee? You're still going to have an average family structure or a multi-unit structure, and so I'm not understanding why you're dropping the per lot amount, given that I think that more fairly represents how the system is used.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fulbert, there already is in statute authority for cities to charge a cash fee that is based on acreage, and we're not attempting to alter that authority, if that's what your question is.
Well, Mr. Chair, if I might, if I look at the bill as introduced and then your delete all amendment,
yep.
I'm assuming it's your delete all amendment.
It is.
If you look on page 2 of the original bill, line 11, you talk about a per lot cash fee, and I don't see that language carried anywhere in your delete all amendment.
Can you give me the line reference again, please, Representative?
In the original bill, page
yep.
2, line
yep.
11, per lot cash fee is the term used. And if you look to your delete all amendments, it actually prescribes on lines 6 and 7 of page 2, for all or some of the new lots created based on fair market value of the land. So you've lost the concept of the per lot charge, which I believe many municipalities
sure.
use related to park dedication.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbert, my recollection is that that was a request that the cities made of us and that we conceded to it because the current statute has park fee authority in it already. We'd be fine with the per lot language, frankly, but we had a discussion with the city. That was, my recollection is that was a change they requested of us, and we acquiesced.
And, Mr. Chair, I do not want to set up a park dedication system based solely on value of land as opposed to something that, in my opinion, more closely reflects the use of the park system, which would be a per-unit charge.
Thank you, Representative Holbert. Any other comments?
Just to be clear, Representative Holbert, I don't think we have a problem with your comment, but I know that the city's had a view about that, and I'd maybe let them speak to themselves.
Further discussion? Representative Markworth.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to appear before you, Mr. Chairman. I'm certainly able to answer other questions as they occur.
Okay. Are there other testifiers, Mr. Chair?
There are other testifiers.
I can wait.
Okay. Is there anybody else for the bill?
Mr. Chair, at this time, not.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE1, delete all amendment, if I could, to get the bill in the shape that we request. So.
Representative Anderson moves the DE1 amendment to House Bill 3451 to get it in the order he'd like it. Any discussion? All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Well, at least the ayes were louder. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, there are some people that would like to testify. They have concerns about the bill and from the city of Maple Grove and from Eden Prairie. So,
Tom Grundhofer, Douglas Carnival, and Robert Lambert. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Grundhofer, General Counsel with the League of Minnesota Cities. I had some specific comments, and I'll get to those, but maybe I can address Representative Holberg's issue. The reason we took out the per lot, or we asked to have the per lot language taken out, was because most park dedication ordinances aren't set up on a per lot basis, and it doesn't work. That concept doesn't work very well when you're talking about sort of a multifamily development, a commercial development, when the lot, you know, the number of lots isn't the kind of the consideration in how you figure the park dedication requirements. We're still talking about the fair market value of the property, so you're not building in the cost of buildings, but having that lot designation kind of doesn't work in cases of multiple family and commercial developments.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know why a per unit won't work.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Holbrook, It might work in many circumstances. The problem is most cities don't kind of solely limit their park dedication formula to just units. Some it has to do with density of a development, that sort of thing. Because when you think about it, it's really the density in some ways that drives the need for park property.
Further discussion? Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a couple, members of the committee, I'll make a couple comments about the bill, and I think it's too strong to say that we oppose the bill, because we have been working with the builders on this and Representative Anderson, but I do want to address just a few concerns about the bill. There was representation that the idea was to conform this to the county park dedication provision. There is something particular that's different in this bill that's different from what the county's is, and that's in the first, on line 1.6 of the delete all amendments, the addition of the developable land standard there. I understand what they're trying to get at, but it does further restrict our local government's ability or city's ability further than what counties have. The next concern is on line 2.9 of the delete all amendment. Currently, under city regulations, we have to, or we are allowed, or it says we may consider the private parks or the private trails that are included in a development. They're changing the may to a must consider. They said they still want to afford flexibility to local governments. But the point is that we don't want our city park plans to be dictated and determined by what somebody might put in terms of a private park in their development. And I think the change from may to must, even though they say it's not intended to be mandatory, gives us concern. Second, another concern is on on line 2.17, it says cash payments must be used only for acquisition and development or improvement of parks. And, of course, we're comfortable with that. The next sentence, though, reads, cash payments must not be used for ongoing operation, maintenance, or redevelopment. The issue is we're allowed to use these funds for improvements, but we're prohibited from using these funds for redevelopment. I don't understand the distinction between the term improvement and the term redevelopment. It seems to me that they're pretty similar, and I think it just leads to ambiguity on that regard. And I think that issue can be solved, but I'm just raising the ambiguity that I think is in the bill there. Fourth concern deals with the provisions on line 2.2 and 2.3 that talks about before we can undertake a park dedication requirement, we have to have, quote, a capital improvement program and adopt a parks and open space plan. And the reality is in the metro area and in some of the larger outstate communities, that's going to be very common. The problem is for smaller communities, they don't have these elaborate capital improvement plans and park and open space plans. I don't think they might have something that looks like it, but it's not that level of complexity. And maybe there's a way to solve that issue, too. And our final concern deals with paragraph H on lines 2.20 and 2.21. Talks about we cannot deny a subdivision based on inadequate supply of parks, open space, trails, or recreational facilities. I understand what they're getting at there, but the reality is when we consider subdivisions, we do consider how much additional burden that may place on park systems, and sometimes you do have to make decisions about subdivision approval based on the current status of public facilities, including parks. suggested modification to that might be something like you cannot base it solely on the inadequate supply of parks, but the word solely is not in there right now, but that's one of the other items that we would urge maybe Representative Anderson to consider. With that, I'll end my testimony and stand open for questions.
Questions?
He wants one.
Representative Markford?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Grunhofer answered my one question regarding the small cities and the kind of the hindrance and undue burden that putting together capital improvement plans and everything else could cost tens of thousands and $100,000 for a small city, so that's problematic. And then, Mr. Olson, Chair Olson, as you look at 1.6, that developable land, do we have a definition for that, or are we working on one? I know that's fresh in our minds off of annexation.
You beat me to the punch, Representative Markford. Representative Peterson is working on it. I'm working on it.
Okay.
It's in discussion. So thank you. That's all. And may need to make sure it applies to this statute. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, what's wrong with the old law? Why is this one being brought forward? I think I like the old one better.
Since the chair and members of the committee, when I first saw this bill, I asked the very same question because literally we did just get done refining this law, I think 2 years ago. And so, but we're willing to work with folks. So,
thank you. Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grunhoff, on page 2, you talked about the consideration for open space, recreation, or common areas and facilities that the applicant proposes to preserve for the subdivision. Would you feel any different if that was modified for those amenities that would be open to the public in the subdivision? I mean, I can see your point if you're building a private facility that's available only to those property owners that live in that subdivision. But if, in fact, they were putting in amenities that would be available to the public at large, would that not be something that the city should consider as at least a portion of their requirement for their park dedication costs?
Representative Holberg, Chair, certainly that would help. But the reality is by, I'll say, forcing the local government to do that, you've sort of given the determination about what city park plan, you know, the comprehensive plan, you sort of have delegated that in some ways to the developer then, and we still have concerns with it.
Well, Mr. Chair, the city still has the authority to approve the development and could make a finding that the proposed recreational amenity that was going to be open to the public was not in line with their park plan and require revision. I mean, the cities have a lot of power in this process to dictate what the developers do, but if the developer is going to put in an amenity that's available to the public and receive no credit for it, why would they ever do it? And some cities might like that opportunity to have that as a tool in their toolbox.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, that's why I said it is a better situation. But
Representative Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that there are a number of small problems that we can try to take care of today, or I hear people on both sides saying they're willing to work on this. I'm wondering, but not making the motion, I'm wondering aloud if a move to table might not be in order to work this out.
Why don't we listen to the rest of the discussion and give everybody a hearing. Some of the things that Mr. Grunhofer mentioned, I know a quick motion will take care of them. But
possibly.
Representative Orbo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was kind of thinking the same thing. There's an awful lot of mandates in here, which are troublesome for me. I don't know. Do you want to do all the fixing it would take? Seems like there's a lot of little fixes to be made.
I'm sorry, Representative.
Seems like there's a lot of little fixes that have to be made. And
let's give the author a chance. You do what you want, but I'd encourage you to give the author a chance to respond.
Yeah, just want to follow up on that. They're little fixes, but they have big implications, I think.
Okay. Mr. Carnival?
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome.
Chair. Thank you. My name is Doug Carnival with the Grand State Carnival Law Firm in Minneapolis, and I represent the Minnesota Recreation and Park Association, which is the Association of Park and Recreation Professionals and Directors throughout the state. I'm here with Mr. Chuck Stifter, who is in the audience from the city of Maple Grove, where he's the park planner, and Mr. Bob Lambert, who is sitting next to me here, who is the Director of Parks and Recreation for the city of Eden Prairie. And Mr. Lambert has some comments about the bill, similar to the ones that were made by the League of Cities, but he has some specific things he wanted to bring up that may cause some issues.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lambert. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Yes, my name is Robert Lambert. I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Eden Prairie, also a member of the Minnesota Recreation and Park Association. And I think, first of all, we've had some discussions with the proposer of the bill, but frankly, I personally don't have any problems with the major rationale that they are using to change language. However, I do have some concerns, as does our mayor and city council and members of the Minnesota Recreation and Park Association, on a couple of issues, and I just want to just talk about those briefly. The first one is on page 2 of your bill, and it's line 2.9, and it's the word must. In establishing a portion to be dedicated or preserved or the cash fee, the regulations must consider the open space, recreational common areas, facilities, etc. And I'm going to give you an example of why we in the city of Eden Prairie are really leery about that. And I go back, I've been the director there since 1978, and back in the late 70s and early 80s, the city had three major plan unit developments where the city, the developer came in and said, we're going to provide recreation amenities here, and for that, we don't want to be charged park fees. We can do a better job than you as a city. And the city agreed with them. One was about a 400-acre plan unit development, one was about 800 acres, and one was 1,000 acres. The 400-acre PUD called Hidden Ponds and the 800-acre PUD called Edenvale eventually went bankrupt. They never did form useful or homeowners associations that lasted very long. The land was all tax forfeit to the city eventually. They never completed any of the trail systems or any of the amenities they committed to. The city ended up, the rest of the city, because we didn't charge park fees for years and years and years, and in fact still don't in those areas, and the rest of the city had to subsidize building park systems or parks and trails within those large areas due to the commitments we made to those developers back in those days. And the one PUD that is still operating, the preserve, a 1,000-acre PUD, has many miles of trails, a large swimming pool, tennis courts, amenities. I'd say at least four occasions over the last 30 years, they've come to the city and asked the city to take over their operation of those facilities because they can't afford to do them. They're in disrepair. They don't want to charge their homeowners any more than they are. The city looked at the facilities and said, we can't afford to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars improving these things to our standards, so we won't accept them. And so right now things continue to deteriorate, and someday the city will end up owning those. It'll cost taxpayers a lot of money to take those over. We also have in another kind of a different situation, developers today that are coming in and putting in small areas, acre and a half areas, where they might put a swimming pool, community center, whatever they call it, a community building, and it's a way to attract buyers to their subdivision, and we don't give consideration of that to our park system. They don't get reduced park fees for that, and we think someday those may just go away as those swimming pools become 25, 30 years old, and those buildings are that same age. I think those homeowners may say, I don't want to maintain these things anymore, and they'll go away. But if this law begins to make a change where the cities must consider, now they say consider, not have to, but if we have to start reducing park fees to accommodate those kind of improvements, that's a slippery slope, and I don't think we want to get into that. If it's, and those right now are all only open to their homeowners, and so they're not public. Someone recommended some language that if they're doing proposals that are open to the public, should we consider those? I would say if you had language in there that said, shall consider recreation amenities that are open to the public provided, I would say I wouldn't have a problem with that language. Shall we? Would you, you don't have to, not must. But if they're open to the public, then and if we look at them and say, okay, they fit within our park and open space system plan, and they are built to our standards that if they can't maintain them, we could take them over, then I would say we'd probably consider that. But that's a long way from where this language is now, and I think we have some concerns there. The second concern is under 2.17, and again, it was stated a little bit earlier, it's the definition of where one line says cash payments received must be used for the acquisition, development, or improvement of parks, and in the next line, cash payments but cannot be used for ongoing operation, maintenance, or redevelopment. I have no problem with operation or maintenance. Cash park keys that developers give us should not be used for maintenance. That is not a good idea. But redevelopment and how you define redevelopment does concern me. As an example, many of these, let's say a typical neighborhood park in our community is 15 or 20 acres, and it serves about a half-mile radius. In that half-mile radius, we may have between 800 and 1,200 units or family units that are within that area. There's probably 500, 600, or 700 acres within that area. So that's not built overnight. It might make 20 years, it's taken 20 years in most of our areas, to fill out all of the development within that service area. We didn't want to wait for those first neighborhoods that were built within that service area, wait 20 years to give them a park. So we took their park fees and we bought the land first. And then the second neighborhood that came in, we took their park fees and we did minimal development. And as an example, we would back in the late 70s, early 80s, I was buying these old, a two-car garage, putting it up as for about $9,000 as the warming house and park shelter. And I told the city council, this is a temporary building. For the last 10 or 15 years, we'll be lucky, but we can't afford to put in a permanent park shelter at this point. Now, 20 years later, the final development comes in, and we take those park fees, and we're going to knock down that old Cecil garage, and we'll put up our park development. I don't want some developers saying, hold on, you can't use those park fees because that's redevelopment. You're redeveloping that park. We say it's just completing the park system as our plan. Now, some of the language we talked about, and I think we're in agreement, is if this is in conformance with our park and open space system plan, then they don't have a problem with it. But that language doesn't say that, and I think we need some more definition there, because the way it is right now, it leaves it open. And the last issue is again, under 2.20, the municipality must not deny, and we're again, we're saying based solely upon the approval of the subdivision. In other words, I agree that I don't think it makes sense for a city to say you cannot develop in our city here because we don't have enough parks to accommodate you. But I really think the cities should be able to use that as one of the reasons why they might deny. Not solely, but certainly one of those areas. So those are the three areas of this language that concern us. We think needs additional work before you would adopt it as law. And hope that perhaps you do continue this and let us work this out.
Question? Thank you, Mr. Lambert. Appreciate your insights. Okay. Representative Anderson, do you have some amendments?
Mr. Chair, I think that things that were brought up prior to us coming to the meeting, the concerns that they have. I think in some areas we are agreeable to making changes to them, and there's others that are concerning to us. So I'd like to have Mr. Coyle just address the one that, I think the one, the 2.9 line of must consider open space, just to get, I know they're saying shall consider open space, but that might be one area that we might have a little, not come to a full agreement yet on.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'll be happy to respond to that, and then I want to come back to this developable land question that somebody raised earlier. The language is must consider. All we're asking them to do is to think about it. If it's a may, it means they don't have to think about it. If we've got facilities that we're building at our own expense that are, as Representative Holbrook has suggested, available for use by the public, we think it's not unreasonable to ask the city to consider it as an offset to what would otherwise be our park fee obligation. And what's happening routinely these days is that cities are saying to developers who come into them, and they're requiring that they pursue residential development by planned unit development, they're saying, yes, we have our park fee ordinance, and yes, we have our park dedication ordinance, but in addition, since this is a PUD, and we get to impose special conditions on you, we want you to build in some of these other facilities. So they're asking us to pay the park fee, they're asking us to give them the park land, but they're also saying, and oh, by the way, we want you to do these other things on top of that. And we're saying, wait a minute, there's got to be one set of rules that we work under, and if we're building private facilities, we ought to at least be entitled to have them consider whether or not there's an offset available by virtue of our doing that. They may say no thank you. We've got a CIP or a plan of some sort, Representative Marquardt, that says, no, that's not the kind of facility that we want in our community. We've got a different plan. Then they're going to be able to say no. But we at least think we ought to be able to have them think about it rather than just arbitrarily dismiss us, which sometimes happens today.
Mr. Coyle, you just used the words I was thinking. On line 9, after the word must, how would the author and you feel about inserting the words at least to make it very clear?
Or reasonably consider or something, sure. I mean, we're not trying to make this be a mandate to the concern raised by Representative Wardlow, but we don't think it's unreasonable to ask them to at least think about it. That's a change that we'd certainly accept. I don't know what the others might think. I'll move through the other questions that were raised unless that was
responded. Mr. Chair, I think we wouldn't have any objection to perhaps, instead of the word must, perhaps use shall give due consideration to, and then after the word facilities, open to the public. That way we would put a standard in there that they have to really look at this without the word must, which I think makes these folks uncomfortable. And Representative Holbrook's comment about open to the public, I think, is probably a good addition as well. No, perhaps the council could turn that into English.
That'd be a suggestion that we would accept.
Turn it
to English?
Only English first. So perhaps shall give due consideration to, and the open space, recreational, et cetera, and afterward facilities open to the public.
Mr. Chair, if you need a member to make that motion, I'll make it. Or
the author can. Since the author of the bill is here as a member of the committee. Representative Anderson, do you have a comment?
What was the last up at the end of the comment? Open to the public? Mr. Chair, I shall move that
okay.
Amendment.
So if I have it correctly, on line 9, page 2, Apostle Paul 3451, we're going to delete the word must. And consider, must
shall,
consider.
Shall give consideration, due consideration to.
And insert shall give due consideration to. And after the word facilities, insert open to the public.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Considering Representative Anderson is on this committee, and people want to supposedly work on language, maybe we could move on to the next bill. Let them work out the language. Okay. Figure out if there is consensus or not. Otherwise, I apologize, Representative Anderson, but I'd be prepared to vote no. So,
can we take care of this amendment and possibly do that, Mr.
Sure,
Representative Anderson?
This side. No problem.
Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Mr. Coyle. I don't know if you want to wait till they come
back
later.
Let's take this amendment.
Okay.
Any discussion to the amendment? Does everybody have the amendment? Any comments for or against the amendment? Sounds like we're okay. Mm-hmm. All those in favor of the Anderson oral motion to insert, to delete on line 9, must consider, insert shall give due consideration to, and after facilities, insert open to the public.
Aye.
All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
I appreciate the reluctance.
They're asleep today. So, we'll... Representative Lanchesky, do you have a question for Mr. Clough?
Mr. Chairman, if we're coming back, I can wait, but I have a question related to the whole bill here.
Okay. Let's wait and we'll take up. We'll just lay this aside.
Okay, we'll lay this over for the moment. Anderson withdraws his motion, and we go to the Hornstein motion, the Hornstein bill. Representative Hornstein moves that House Bill 3095 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that would be the motion.
Representative Hornstein, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is also related to parks and dedication fees. However, it's very limited in scope just to the city of Minneapolis, and it's really enabling legislation. What it does, members, is it allows the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and the City Council to develop an ordinance around the park dedication fee. And the reason, Mr. Chair and members, this is so important to us in Minneapolis is that we're very proud of our park system. The Grand Rounds, for example, which is a scenic byway, which encompasses, really runs roughly from Minnehaha Falls up around the chain of lakes through the north side of town, crosses the river, goes to northeast Minneapolis, and encompasses, you know, many of our parks, not all of them, of course. But we have 5 million annual visitors just to that byway, and of course there's, you know, additional urban parks not included in that figure. Many of those visitors come from throughout the region and, in fact, the state. So our park system is truly a regional asset. It's the most visited outdoor. The Minneapolis park system is the most visited outdoor recreational venue in the state, and we need to have. We need to continue to have you know, the kinds of facilities and spaces and infrastructure for our parks to keep up with the increasing demand. And as many of you know, we've also had funding issues with local government aid, et cetera. So we have to really be proactive and look for innovative ways to raise money that makes sense. And I strongly believe that this dedication fee is one of those. So, Mr. Chair, members, I have a couple of people from the Minneapolis Park Board that can also testify to this bill. And if there aren't any questions, I'd be happy to introduce them.
Welcome to the committee.
The first speaker is Carol Kummer, who is a member of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board.
Welcome. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Carol Kummer, and I'm a member of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. I also chair the Legislative Committee, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of Representative Hornstein's House File 3095. As he was stating, the biggest challenge faced by Minneapolis parks today is reduced funding coupled with the increased use of an aging system. Not only is the park's infrastructure aging, so is the general population. In addition, our demographics are changing. We are experiencing an increase in population which is more diverse. The demand for more parks and green space is growing right along with these changes and is the greatest in the areas lacking parks, which is downtown, the upper river, and the old industrial sections of town that are transitioning into neighborhoods. Another area that we are going to be needing more parks is along the light rail line. Other communities have the ability to impose a park fee when land is subdivided for development. The city of St. Paul is also in the process of establishing a park dedication fee, and it appears that no legislative approval is needed for them because of their form of governance. But across the river in Minneapolis, however, the park board has been independent since its establishment by the legislature in 1883. After researching current state statutes, our legal counsel advised the board that the language in Chapter 462.358, Subdivision 2, did not fit our situation well. rather than going ahead on our own and having it challenged later, we felt the better course of action was to make it perfectly clear what we want to do, why we need it, and how it would be accomplished. I'd like to thank Representative Hornstein for authoring House File 3095, and I thank the committee for allowing me to address you today, and I'll stand for questions if you have any.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, a comment. It's probably unfortunate that the city of Minneapolis didn't follow the same path prior to implementing photocops. That's an editorial comment. My question for Representative Hornstein, I mean, I know that Minneapolis likes to do things a little different, but, you know, this ordinance may exclude senior housing and affordable housing from paying the fee. Seniors use the park. Poor people use the park. You know, I just don't get this. We continue to do funding of things, and not everybody pays the fair amount, and I mean, I just don't know. I mean, you're going to do what you're going to do. Minneapolis is going to do what they're going to do with this. But I mean, what's the rationale? How can you justify for the rest of the people that are already paying park fees? You're a city that charges, the park board levies the tax. You're already doing that to everybody. Why are you going to pick winners and losers with your new housing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, that's an excellent question. I'd be happy to answer it. And it's actually language that I wanted, and originally the park board folks, when we discussed this, you know, I think that they're neutral on it. But I felt that, you know, we do have in certain neighborhoods, you know, a real problem, increasing shortages of affordable housing. And again, this is a there's a May qualifier on line 13. And so it doesn't require the city council to exclude these developments. And maybe there could be some kind of a fee based on ability to pay that's progressive in nature. But we didn't want to make a real problem and a real crisis, actually, in certain neighborhoods, even worse, by, you know, requiring that these affordable units be treated the same as some very upscale housing, which is also going on in the city, and we need both if they're not mutually exclusive. But I thought that, you know, in the interest of, you know, progressivity and fairness, we at least, you know, have that language in there so that it could provide the city council some flexibility. It's important.
I mean, Representative Hornstein, you know, I'm probably going to support your bill, not that I like it, but I just... First of all, I mean, they showed with the fishing licenses for seniors that they probably do the most fishing, you know, with their licenses when there was a move to reduce the fee for seniors. You know, your talk about the more expensive homes, you maybe you could, you know, set your rate based on the values of the homes. Again, if you have a family in a big house or a family in the little house, their ability and time and inclination to recreate probably has nothing to do with their income level. And so I just don't think that what you're trying to do is fair here.
Representative Hornstein.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Holbert, I agree in terms of your observation in terms of usage of the amenities here. But again, not all senior housing is alike, and you know we have senior citizens in our community that are struggling very much under, you know, the increasing demands on limited incomes, whether it's increasing costs of housing or medical services or prescription drugs, et cetera. And so, you know, I want to be sensitive to the fact that an additional fee, you know, is going to be a hardship on some of these seniors. And again, I didn't want to dictate anything to the city council. It's ultimately, and the park board, it's ultimately going to be their decision how they want to write these ordinances. But I do think it's important to acknowledge the fact that we do have a situation not only in the city of Minneapolis but across the region where you know, basic needs, including housing, are increasing in cost and are a hardship on many of our people. And so if we're going to look at a new fee, we ought to be sensitive to the fact that a new fee is going to hurt some disproportionately more than others. But ultimately, it's the City Council's decision, and I thought to acknowledge that there's an issue with affordable housing, both among seniors and the general population, was important. But it's not, you know, make or break, and I know that wasn't originally in the in terms of the vision of the Park Board for this bill. So it may or may not be an issue once it gets to the local level, but it is for myself and many others. And I would argue some on the City Council as well.
Representative Hornstein, we have three more members with questions. Do you want to go on to those before we go to Mr. Pedersen?
I would introduce Mr. Kirk Peterson, who's also with representing the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. Many of you know him; he's a familiar face here around the Capitol. And if you would have anything to add, Mr. Peterson, at this point, or we could just ask that question.
Mr. Chairman,
welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson.
Members of the committee, Kirk Peterson with Bryce Michaels and Wall, who we represent the Minneapolis Park Board. I'll be brief. I won't go over the things that have already been covered, but I could just point out some similarities and differences real quick with the way our bill operates. It does conform. It requires us to conform to the general law that you were talking about in the previous bill. We do have to have an ordinance passed both by the City Council and by the Parks Board. We have to have a fair and reasonable standard. It does have to have a nexus to the development area. The money would be put in a special fund, and this was an issue that was raised by the developers earlier. Under our plan, the special fund would be collected and administered by the city, not by the park board. This is a point of clarification. And one other question that was raised, we would not be using this money for continuing operation and maintenance funds, but rather for just acquisition development. A couple of quick differences between our approach and this general statute. We don't have the land dedication requirements. Minneapolis is obviously a pretty fully developed city. We don't have a lot of land to set aside, so we're just relying on the park fees. You've already talked about the exclusions for the low and moderate housing units, and we do impose a cap of $3,000 on ours. Finally, Mr. Chairman, and to Representative Holberg, I'm with you on the photocop issue. My wife got photocopied, paid the ticket 1 week before the court decision came down on turning it to me. I'm with you on that one. So that's all I have, Mr. Chairman, unless there's questions.
And Mr. Chairman, at least we can learn. At least we can learn from our mistakes.
Representative Strong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to comment on the affordability and the fairness of the fee. I guess I hear Representative Holberg's argument. It probably isn't fair. I guess as I look at a $750,000 home, I don't think the $3,000 fee is going to keep somebody from buying that home, but it might on an affordable home. It is a significant number for somebody on an affordable home. But, yes, it's not fair. The Park Board, is this an elected body?
Just comment.
Yeah. So it's a general referendum. So they are, in effect, subject to a referendum on this in terms of the voters.
Correct.
If they think that's what they're doing is wrong by imposing the fee, we can kick them out, just throw the bums out.
Yeah. Ms. Campo is emphatic about
that. Yep. As she usually is. Thank you.
Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hornstein. Trying to figure out why you need this bill, and I haven't figured out, is it because you're trying to do it jointly, or is it because you're trying to do the $3,000 per unit? It would seem to me the Minneapolis City Council could just do this, you know, alone, wouldn't need any special legislation to do it, and then transfer funds to the Minneapolis Park Board, unless Minneapolis Park Board is not completely under its jurisdiction.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lanchesky, that is correct, but I would like maybe Mr. Peterson could elaborate on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Mr. Peterson.
The way we looked at the statute, it's very much oriented towards subdivisions and new land acquisition. And the way the statute defines it, at least the way we read it, is in order to be eligible to use a park development fee, you have to build a new road or put in new sewer systems in order to be eligible to use park dedication fees. In Minneapolis, obviously, that's not very realistic, so we said we need some more specific authority to do this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Chairman Olson. Well, to that point, I think that's true, except for planned unit developments. And if you just called these units planned unit developments, you could do it. Because I don't, I'm looking at Representative Peterson now, I think for most of the redeveloping suburbs, if you have a planned unit development of two or three units, you can, in our community, you can do this and you don't have to put a road in. So maybe, is there, maybe staff can clarify, because I don't, I think you can just do it. The city council could just do it, but maybe staff would disagree. I mean, I think the language per unit is the problem. And that's what Representative Holberg raised in the beginning, the per unit thing. But if it's a planned unit development, you can do it now. I think. I don't know. I'm just trying to help Representative Hornstein, thinking that maybe you don't even need the bill and you can do it already. But maybe staff would say that they can't. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, I honestly am not sure. I would defer to the city's statement of need for the legislation in order to do it. I understand your argument. I think you have a good point, but if the city believes that it needs the authority, I would not want to go to court saying they don't.
Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Peterson, could you pull the microphone closer, please?
Mr. Chairman, to that point, Brian Rice, who's the general counsel for the Park Board and one of the city attorneys for the city of Minneapolis, both came to the conclusion that it was vague and that we probably did need special statutory authority to do it. And rather than risk a lawsuit later, we figured since we are a creature of the legislature, we should come to the legislature for that authority.
Representative Winchester.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just encourage members to support it then. I mean, I hear that Representative Holberg, you know, raised some issues on uniqueness, and I agree with that. But effectively, I think most communities can do this and don't even have to come here for special legislation. I mean, my community certainly is doing it, so I wouldn't want to say Minneapolis can't, even though they're trying to do this joint thing with their park board.
To this point, Representative Frohn.
Yes, Representative Hornstein, if we're going to take state-level legislation to allow this city to impose this fee, I'm sure we can count on your vote for the Twin Stadium, too.
You want to answer that, Representative Hornstein?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frohn, I appreciated your support of the referendum amendment last year, and we do have a referendum here, which is an election for the park board. So, that's the I think that's the bottom line, and that's, I believe, in elections. And Representative Garofalo, and Mr. Chair, that's why I supported summer isn't on the Met Council anymore, but we had an elected Met Council bill too last year.
I'll just follow up real quickly. We have an election for the members of the Hennepin County Board as well.
Yeah.
Same, almost the same thing here.
Yeah, but you voted for the referendum amendment.
Yeah,
right?
So I should vote against this because there's no referendum.
We're past deadline for the stadium bill, members. Representative Wardlow.
Great, is that it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think we're depressed. We made some news.
I'm a firm believer in local control, and I was going to say something similar, like if the Twin Stadium were just going to change it to a fee, it'd probably be fly right through these. And the $3,000 does scare me. Maybe it's for an apartment. Maybe those would be like apartment buildings most of the time. I don't know. But I do believe in local control, and I'll support the bill. But I'll let it go with that.
Further discussion? Questions? Representative Hornstein or Ms. Comer? Or did you have comments, Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify the $3,000 is a cap. It's up to $3,000. It's not a flat fee of $3,000. Just wanted to clarify that.
Representative Wardlow.
I understand, but sometimes we always raise to the highest level possible.
Isn't that what caps are for?
Reverend Herbert, in her infinite wisdom, I agree with her, as everyone else seems to around here.
The question I had is on the handout, I believe maybe for Ms. Kummer.
Yep.
The estimates, I'm just curious, this is somewhat unrelated, but it's I just want to highlight it. Estimates that are that 20 to 60,000 new units will be built in Minneapolis in the next 20 years, and that's 50 to 150,000 people. Do you know whereabouts most of that would be built, by chance?
Mr. Chair, not off. And there would be a great deal of infill, and it is a projection, and I believe it comes from the Met Council.
Those are Met Council projections?
I believe that's the ones that that I think most of the metro area actually uses.
I was curious if most of that would be along the light rail line.
Yeah. No, not. No, Mr. Chair, probably wouldn't get them all there.
Mr. Chair, I mean, Mr. Chair, members, it's a really good question. You're seeing a lot of development, particularly in downtown and some of the neighborhoods, you know, right around that area. So it's not all of it. It's scattered throughout the city. But, you know, this is part of it. There was a growth policy planning process on the council, and that's where this is part of that, you know, that figure that you often hear about a million more people in the 2030. So that a lot of that is, you know, spread across the entire region, you know, the majority of it in the developing areas, but there is quite a bit in the entering suburbs in the city as well.
Thank you. Further discussion to the bill. Looks like our next bill is ready, so any further discussion? Representative Hornstein renews his motion that House Bill 3095 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Anybody else to speak for or against the bill? Seeing no further discussion. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill be passed and sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate, members, that I heard you this time on the ayes. Okay, we'll renew Representative Anderson's motion to take up House File 3451. That be passed as amended and sent to the General Register. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we've come to a minimal agreement here between the two groups, and we'll have each of them talk about, as we said, 1.6 of the Delete All Amendments, DE1, to talk about their concerns. And the first thing was brought up by Representative Marquardt regarding developable land. So I'll have Mr. Coyle start out with us on that one.
Mr. Coyle?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you very much for your patience in allowing us to bring this back to you. With respect to line 1.6, the reference to the developable land, the issue there was trying to make sure that cities didn't deny property owners the ability to build on a portion of their property, but then turn around and calculate that as part of their dedication requirement, so that the cities get the benefit of a larger land area, even though the property owner doesn't get to use that larger land area. But the change that we've agreed to make, which the cities and the other stakeholders were accepting of, is we would strike the reference to build to developable, and we would substitute the word buildable. And then after the reference to land, we would insert a comma. And then I'm inserting the phrase, as defined by municipal ordinance, comma, and then continue. And to your counsel, I've got a copy of this verbiage that I'll get to you when we're done, just so that we make sure we catch all the right words.
Okay, Representative, you want to take each provision one at a time?
I would do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move that change.
Representative, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Representative Anderson moves on the DE1 amendment, page 1, line 6, delete the word developable and insert buildable. After the word land, insert comma as defined by municipal ordinance.
Comma. And then the word of, which we put in there, will come into play for the rest of the language, and that's an amendment that I agree with.
Everybody have that?
Representative Anderson moves that. Representative Hillstrom, amendment.
I just have a question. Do townships fall under this land, this amendment, or this bill? And if so, then does municipal ordinance work, given a township may not have that?
It does.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mr. Grundhofer can comment as well. We tried to use the language of the statute, which refers to municipalities, so we're just trying to stick with that phrasing, Representative, but if Mr. Grundhofer has a different view about it, I'd certainly defer to him.
Mr. Grundhofer. Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that's exactly right. We're not changing which local governments it applies to or doesn't apply to. This park dedication, I think for townships, the only situations where it would come into play would be urban towns in this statute. And in this statute, the definition of municipality includes urban towns. So I think we're comfortable with it. I will state the general caveat. We were just drafting this out in the hall. I think everybody's agreed that we're going to have to take a quick look, and if there's some little fixes, we're going to come back and try to figure that out in the floor, I guess.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we could get staff, actually, to clarify this, that would be helpful.
Ms. Jackson?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, yes, the statute does apply to towns. Municipality is defined in 462.352 as any city, including a city operating under a home rule charter, and any town. So, but the subdivision regulation statute currently applies to towns, so this does not change who it applies to.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The clarification was that if they use the phrase municipal ordinance, do townships or towns have municipal ordinances?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, because the term is defined to include towns, the implication would be town ordinances. And if they're doing subdivision regulations, they're doing it through ordinances.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have a question for Mr. Grundhofer. You had alluded earlier to the fact that we've recently gone through this ordinance and done some work on it. My question for you is, when was that done, and when was that done? I guess there's two parts to the question. When was that done, and was it done in this type of process where somebody brought in a bill, or was it done in what I would call maybe a more thoughtful process with more cities weighing in on it to get a better product at the end?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Grundhofer,
I think, and Mr. Coyle can correct me, but I think it was done 2 years ago, and it was done as part of a comprehensive look at sort of the development fee, dedication fee system.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as a follow-up to that, then, how long has state law been creating a parkland dedication fee? And the question is related to how many problems has there been with it? How many times has it been redone? Is it a problem? Do we have a problem now that needs redoing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi. I think the park dedication sort of concept has probably existed for at least 30 years, I think, in the statutes. And I truly cannot attest to, you know, the number of problems there have been. I'm sure Mr. Coyle would describe some, but I don't know of them.
Mr. Chair, Representative
Coyle,
the circumstance that we find is that cities are quite rapidly migrating to a system of ordinances that gives them complete flexibility in essentially negotiating the terms and conditions under which a residential development can occur, and that's through planned unit developments. And so we are trying to respond to circumstances where we find ourselves trying to get a plat approved in a city. They have by ordinance reserved to them very broad discretion to try to, some people might say, extract from the developer concessions that the developer feels like it shouldn't have to make, as opposed to doing straight zoning, where they would just have a very rigid set of standards. And so the problem that has arisen for us with respect to this language is we have cities in some cases that have a 100-acre plat, and they're saying you're only going to get to build on 70 because 30 of it is wetland. But the way their policies work is they're going to want to have you do a dedication or pay a park fee that's based on the totality of the land area. And they're saying to us, well, it's a PUD, we get to have this give and take, even though it's kind of a one-sided give and take in some ways. And that's the condition that they impose on the PUD, and the developer doesn't have any way to say, wait, that's just, I mean, that's unfair. You're getting both sides of the deal, and it's unfair to the builder or the developer. So that's the issue. You may not think that's a legitimate point, but that's the condition that I see representing these folks in the field.
Mr. Chair.
Further discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just, because we keep getting back to this PUD, and I was on the city council and we did a bunch of PUDs, and I just can't remember. Is there a benefit at all that the developer gets for going into an area that's a PUD, or is it strictly the benefit of the city? I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, why a city would want to do one and why a developer would want to go to a place that has one. I just can't remember.
Mr. Carl.
Madam Chair, the intent of the PUD process is to try to provide flexibility, and it's supposed to try to identify benefits. But in fact, what happens most often is the city says, here are our standards, and oh, by the way, we want something else. And we have this PUD process that allows us to make that be a condition of your approval. And at the end of the day, we just want to build houses for the most part, and we're trying to get as much predictability into the process as we can. But it's intended to be a two-way street, I acknowledge that, and it's intended to allow for some honest negotiation about the design of the plat, and we're trying to deal with this one situation where we feel like we don't get the recognition for the property at the same time that we're told we can't use it.
To the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to Mr.
Okay, but let's try to get back on track after this. Representative Peterson.
But in a PUD, the city can do different setbacks and width streets and a whole lot of things that they wouldn't do according to the zoning ordinance, and that's just the trade-off. So it is typically it's a two-way street, benefits for both. And most times, I'm under the impression that the developers appreciate the PUD and many times will ask for it. So it's not a punishment to the developers.
That's fair. Okay, to the amendment. But his voice is ready again. Any further discussion to the amendment? All those in favor of the Anderson motion to amend the D1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Two more, I understand. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the second page of the DE1 amendment, line 2.2, after the word improvement, strike program and insert budget, and after the word and there, the first and, strike adopt and insert adopt a and stop and insert the word have. Or I guess you should just keep the A in there. I'm sorry.
Okay. So on page 2 of what is now the bill, the DE1 amendment, delete the word program, insert budget, and after the word and, the first and, delete the word adopt and insert have.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, and I move that amendment.
Okay. Capital improvement budget and have a parks and open place space plan. Okay. Discussion. Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Now, if my understanding is correct, this would also apply to townships. Does this apply to townships, this portion? So your ship still would be asking a township, if they don't have one, to come up with a capital improvement budget they may have and also have a parks and open space plan. Now, not a huge cost, but there still would be some cost there to probably have someone help them do that and so forth. It's still going to add a little bit of a burden to towns and small cities.
Thank you, Representative Mark Court. Ms. Dyson, we're talking just urban towns.
Right. Mr. Chair, no. Throughout the statute, municipality means city or town of any kind.
Further discussion? We'll have to flag this with the township representative for later discussion.
Sure. No.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, All those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay?
No.
The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, on line 2.9, after the word regulations, strike must consider and insert shall give due consideration to.
We did this already. I think we did this one already.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Then we have to move down to 2.17, line 2.17. Mr. Chair, after the word open space and before that period, insert based on the approved park system
plan.
On it. Can't read it. Based on the approved park system plan. And then on 2.18, after the word operation, strike comma, insert or. And at the end of that same line, after the comma, strike or redevelopment of, or redevelopment.
I'm sorry, Representative Anderson. I got the first part, but I didn't get the
2.18?
Yes.
After the word operation, strike the comma, insert or, O-R. Then after maintenance and the comma, strike or development.
Redevelopment.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, take that second comma.
Oh.
You want to take the comma.
Mr. Chair, after maintenance, take out the second comma. Oh, that comma. I'm sorry.
Okay, Representative Anderson moves on page 2, line 17, after the word space before the period, insert based on the approved park system plan. And on line 18, after the word operation, delete the comma, insert or. And after maintenance, delete the comma or redevelopment.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Everybody have that? Representative Hiltrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Boy, twice in 1 week I'm advocating on behalf of the township. I think somebody better see if I'm sick. I can't imagine that there are townships that have these plans that you're talking about, and maybe I'm you know, naive here, but I really think that what you're saying here now is that your townships better become much more like a city, because we're giving them an awful lot more regulation. So, with that, I'm done, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Good point. Concern mounts with each one. Questions? Other discussion? Representative Anderson, do you have similar concerns, and would you like to wait until next meeting to have a chance to work with the townships on this as well? Mr. Carr?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Hillstrom's concern, we certainly have previously reviewed this language with the township representatives. Now, maybe their position on this bill has changed, but they did not previously express a concern about the bill. And what I would say about your concern about the general burden that this is imposing, this park dedication, park fee issue only occurs in townships that are subdividing. So for townships that are not subdividing, this is not an issue at all.
Thank you. Representative Holberg.
And Mr. Chair, it doesn't have to be a big production either. I mean, I think that what they're asking for is the accountability. How are we going to spend this money that we're collecting under this process?
Mm-hmm.
And what is our plan for our park system? And I don't think it has to be real elaborate.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
Well, Mr. Chair, that's correct. You've taken my father just sold his property, 250 acres, 4 years ago. And by statute, by law, he had to, and the developer had to set aside parkland, but there's nothing to say when it has to be done and how it's going to be done and where and so forth and so on. So the accountability factor is left up in the air, and that's my concern as well. And that's why we're bringing forward this legislation. And I'm sorry if it's infringing a little bit on townships or, you know, cities, but I think we're trying to make them all play on an equal playing field if we're going to do something like this. So, and as Mr. Coyle said, you know, if the township is subdividing, then, you know, what can I say?
What I like about your bill, Representative Anderson, is you're addressing what I was trying to do in the findings of our annexation bill. Further discussion. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, townships are going to be showing this bill as amended before it goes on to the next stop, which is, where's the next stop?
It's one of the general register.
So, as long as they have that promise.
Sure.
Because I remember township sitting at that table just last week.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Solom was somewhat perturbed about things, and so he should be consulted, I think.
If there's serious concerns, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if we found out today, there'd even be time to move this back to the committee and do the work here instead of on the floor, which I'd be open to. But Representative Peterson.
I would like a reaction from the park director from Eden Prairie.
Okay.
Would you weigh in on this a little bit? Would you be willing to...
Mr. Lambert, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Lambert, I'd just like to have you weigh in on where we are at this point with these thoughtful amendments.
I'm fully in support of the changes we've made thus far and that we're proposing here. I recognize I grew up outside of St. Peter in a small farm down there, and I'm out in Oshawa Township, and I understand your concerns for these things. But what they're asking for is this is really going to affect those communities that are starting to subdivide. And if they're starting to subdivide, they really, I hate to say it, but they should be forced to start planning for how they're going to spend this money before they get into too far down the road. And I see a lot of these small communities out in the second, third, fourth tier suburbs that are taking this money and don't have a plan for park systems. And all of a sudden, you've got huge numbers of people out there wondering where are the ball fields and where are the trails. Well, and all of a sudden, it's too far gone, and there's no land left to develop. So I think, yeah, it's an imposition on those small communities to do some planning ahead of time, but it's money well spent, and there should be nothing in this ordinance that says that they can't use these cash park fees to pay for those plans. And that should be a usable expenditure of those fees. So,
thank you. Further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Anderson motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, one last amendment.
Representative Anderson?
On the same page, page 2, line 2.20, after the word based, insert the word solely.
Okay, Representative Anderson moves on page 2, line 20, after the word based, insert solely. Discussion to that amendment? Seeing none, I believe we discussed it before. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, amendment is adopted. 2, the bill is amended. Any further discussion? Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, will this bill as amended prohibit cities from charging a park fee based on a per unit amount?
Representative Anderson.
I don't believe it will.
Representative Holbert.
And so what, it will be per unit based on land value, or it will be just a per unit?
Representative Anderson.
I believe it's a per unit, but I'll have Mr. Coyle clarify.
Mr. Coyle?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, it would be our thought that with the approved capital improvement budget that they would be able to allocate it on a per-unit basis or a per-lot basis if they chose.
Representative Holberg.
Chair, if I might, without regard to the land value, so in other words, the City of Lakeville could continue to charge so much per residential unit across the totality of the city and not get into this value of the property game?
That would be Mr. Cole. That would be our intent.
Thank you.
Representative Lanning. Excuse me. Representative Hornstein was first. Begging your pardon.
I'm fine.
Representative Lanning.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Coyle and Mr. Grundhofer, since I missed the first part of this, if they are in support or in agreement with this bill now as amended.
Oh, we have.
Mr. Grundhofer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, yes, we are.
Mr. Clark?
Representative Lanning, yes.
Mr. Grundhofer?
Mr. Chair, with the one caveat, literally we're drafting this on the fly. We want to have a chance to make sure there's no unintended effects of this.
And Mr. Chair, if there's some circumstances that come up in the next 24 hours, I'm more than willing to bring it back if we have to.
Okay. Representative Lanning?
Mr. Chairman, I support many of the provisions in this bill as amended, but frankly, I think it kind of goes over the top in terms of micromanaging these transactions. And when you have a community that has all kinds of subdivisions or developments that come into play here, I mean, you could conceivably have a whole host of special funds that have to be tracked and managed. And I just think, Representative Anderson, that some of these provisions just go a little too far.
Further discussion? To the bill as amended. Representative Anderson renews his motion that House File 3095 be recommended to pass as amended and be sent to the General Register. Any further discussion? Anybody want to speak for or against the bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed as amended and be sent to the General Register. Members, we have minutes. Couldn't read them right away. From March 27th. Which of you found the error? We need to make a correction. Representative Marquardt? I'll give you the error. Representative Marquardt moves the March.
Don't move, Chair.
Representative Marquardt moves the March 27th minutes. Well, I could have done it too since I had the error. on page 118, it's listed as page 118. This is Representative Joe Mullery. We missed the testifier, and we need to insert, and Pierre Willett, comma, City of Minneapolis, comma, provided testimony. Okay? So if you want to incorporate that as the adoption.
Mr. Chair, I'll adopt that.
Okay? Everybody have that? Representative Marquardt moves the adoption of the minutes for March 27. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved for March 27th. Thank you, members, very much. Your patience and diligence today, as it was on numerous other bills before, is appreciated. Thank you all very much. God bless, and meeting's adjourned.